This is Forrest, and I'd like to welcome you all to the second Allen Gordon webinar. The first one of these that we had was a tremendous success. I feel like it changed a lot of people. Someone mentioned how important it would be to have that as a sticky in our forum because they wanted to listen to the audio of it again and again. Very excited to have another one. Learn a little bit more. People maybe have had a chance to think about what they learned from the last one and apply that, and hopefully people will have some great questions. Questions are, of course, what this is all about, so I hope people will step up and ask their questions. This is just to remind everyone that what is being offered here is general advice, is general techniques. If you have medical concerns, you definitely should talk to a doctor. Dr. Sarno, Dr. Schubiner, all of the doctors in their books, they all say, make sure to rule out something serious. You know, this is not a substitute for professional advice. Also, this call is being recorded, and it's going to be posted up on YouTube, and most likely on YouTube, there'll probably be an MP3 which people can download. That way they can listen to it again and again, which I think people would find really, really helpful. The last one was only in a thread, so you couldn't listen to it. We want to put this one, make this one more accessible. So just to give people an update on that. Does anyone have any questions about that? I'm monitoring the chat room if anybody wants me to follow out on that while we're doing kind of that business stuff. Then I am going to unmute. This person goes by Dustin. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead and call me by my name. That'll work.
All right.
Hi, Dustin. How are you?
Doing okay. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I guess, excuse me, I'll just start off by giving a little bit of a snapshot of my history. I sustained an injury when I was in the military back in 1998, mm-hmm. Rather 1999 or so is when I had the injury. And long story short, was medically discharged from the Army because herniated disc, degenerative disc disease, you know, the classic diagnoses that are given mm-hmm. to people with back injuries, sciatic pain, low back pain, and a chronic severe nature. And really suffered pretty much daily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for about 12 years. Wow. Stumbled across the work of Sarno back in May of this year. And I've read Healing Back Pain, I've read Mind-Body Prescription, and I've read The Great Pain Deception by Steve Ozanich, or is it? I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name, but and I've felt like I've made leaps and bounds of progress. I've had people around me who have known me, you know, in pain for 12 years who have said that they've seen me do things that they never thought they'd see me do again. Okay. And that's true. I mean, I've played racquetball fairly recently. I never thought I'd get to pick up a racket again. I've gone bowling a few times. I bowl with a 16-pound ball, and you know, that was something that would really aggravate my back.
And, wow.
A lot of progress, but here in the last, two or three weeks or so, and I'm not exactly sure what's been the catalyst. I've really tried to pay attention emotionally to what's going on, but there seems to be some things going on. And I'm you know, a classic TMSer. I'm obsessed with monitoring my pain. I try very hard to not pay attention to the pain level, but, you know, when you've had it for 12 years, it's difficult to tune out unless you're just really actively engaged in something.
Yeah.
And I've been finding that things that shouldn't hurt me, things, you know, I know consciously and intellectually, I know there's nothing wrong with my back, but, you know, I'll be reaching up high for something and my back and my leg will just start searing with pain or, you know, I've been doing a lot more bending at the waist, trying not to focus so much on bending at the, you know, bend at the knees instead of the back type of mentality. You know, I've been trying to just be normal, and for the most part, I've been successful. There has been some nagging pain in my left leg that I can't seem to get to go away, and I don't know if it's frustration tied in with that, or if there's some other external catalyst that has caused my pain to increase in levels in the past couple of weeks. But I've been struggling the past couple of weeks.
So it seems like, well, first of all, I just want to say I'm very impressed. I only use it like a 12-pound bowling ball, so wow. So it seems like you were having like continual progress over a period of months, and then a couple weeks ago, it started getting worse.
Yes.
Okay, and you don't know why?
Well, I mean, I don't have any direct answers as to why. There are stresses in my life that, you know, I find that I actively suppress emotion. I feel like I'm in positions where I don't have any other choice. I feel like I've not found a good, healthy way to discharge some of that built up tension and rage. I'm a father of two under two, and just that in and of itself is very emotionally demanding. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, you know, you have to put the needs of them in front of yourself because they're not capable of meeting their own needs. But I take it, you know, I take it too far, and I know I take it too far. I was in counseling several years back for some pretty severe depression, and I kind of told my counselor then that I felt like I had a little bit of a messiah complex. Not that I, you know, feel like I'm the savior of the world or anything, but that I feel like I compulsively have to meet the needs of others at the detriment of my own.
Well, that's going to generate a lot of rage.
Well, and I recognize that. I just can't seem to figure out what to do about it.
Well, let's talk about it. You said you have two kids under the age of two?
Yes.
Wow. That just gave me a shot of vicarious rage. That sounds really intense. And you're obviously, your kids are at a point right now where their emotional needs are all pretty profound, and there's a lot of demands that are being put on you.
Well, sure. You know, my son is, he'll be two in about a month, and we have recently figured out just how much attention he really needs. I mean, he's independent. He'll play on his own, but he really flourishes when he's got a lot of one-on-one time.
Okay.
And my daughter, who is, I guess she's about 3 months old now, she's, I don't know if it's the events surrounding her birth that have been traumatic. Both my kids are adopted, so of course they both have that separation from their birth mothers. And there's a lot more anger in my daughter. You know, even at 3 months old, her cry is angry. It's not, you know, meet my needs. It's meet my needs or I'm going to keep screaming and hopefully make the rage make you explode type of cry.
Right.
And our son didn't cry like that. So it's a different thing that we're dealing with her daughter.
Well, how do you feel when your daughter starts crying and maybe you're in a place where you're like, I'm in pain or I want to watch TV or I just want to sleep, and all of a sudden your daughter starts crying and you have to jump out of bed? What are you aware of feeling? I want to preface this by saying you do not need to act on your rage in order to successfully process it. You don't need to do anything. You know, as long as you allow yourself to feel the feelings, that's enough not to need these symptoms, these defense mechanisms. So when your daughter does scream, right, she's 3 months old, she has this cry and you're in this relaxing place, what do you feel?
Well, I mean, I can tell you straight up that I feel rage. I feel anger. You know, I feel anger at the fact that for whatever reason, I feel incapable of meeting her needs. I feel anger that she's nothing but a little bundle of id, but I feel like that she should understand that I'm trying my best, and I know that she's not capable of that. But for me, I'll get to the point where I'm not physically shaking in anger, but I can feel it boiling up inside me, and I kind of. I do recognize it. I do feel.
What do you want to do with that rage? If all of this rage is inside you and you feel it, what do you want to do with it?
I'm going to break in briefly just to say that Dustin's voice occasionally for me and also for Becca is cutting in and out. Alan, if you'd like, we can have him call back on a phone. That tends to happen more frequently when people Skype in than when they call in during the phone. So I'll let you make that final call. And I also just want to say, yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I can relate to what you're saying, Dustin. Dustin, you back on the line?
I'm back on.
Okay, I'm going to cut back out and let Alan take it from here.
Thanks.
So, Dustin, it sounds like you've been struggling with back pain for a while. You learned about psychosomatic pain. You learned about Sarno and TMS a few years back. And a few months back, and you've made a lot of progress, but there's been some setbacks. And one of the things that you were talking about was just that sometimes you have a tendency to put other people's needs ahead of your own, and you're not really sure what to do with this rage that you feel.
That's correct.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. Let's see if we can help you get in touch with that a little bit more right now. You know, a lot of times, you know, growing up with, if you have parents that let you know it's not okay for you to feel angry, we live in a society where really anger is something that's looked down upon. It isn't something that is encouraged or looked at as this natural part of us. But we're human beings, and evolutionarily, we have a lot of animalistic rage in us. If you see a chimp at the zoo that, you know, maybe there's like a 7-year-old who's pelting it with peanuts or something, this chimp will run up to the gate and would kill the kid if they could. I mean, it has just this rage, and it doesn't have a super ego telling it this rage is not okay. And human beings have feelings of murderous rage inside of us. Most of the time, you know, people don't act on it, but to dismiss it could be troubling. It could really lead to symptoms down the road. And you know, you've heard of the UFC, Dustin?
Yes.
Fighting competition. You know, it's no surprise that this thing is taking off, that it's so popular. It's just people in a ring beating the crap out of each other with fists and knees and elbows. It really gives people an outlet for these feelings of rage. When you see, you know, Ron Artest or Meta World Peace, the basketball player, elbow James Harden in the head, and the next day it has 2 million hits on YouTube. These, you know, the Incredible Hulk, you know, grossing $250 million, even though it was a terrible movie. You know, these things are outlets for people's deep-seated feelings of rage. And so to help you really get in touch with these feelings could create this level of internal harmony so that you don't need these symptoms. So you were telling me about a time when, you know, you're lying in bed, it's late at night, and your 3-month-old will just start crying or screaming, and you start feeling rage inside of you. If you imagine that scenario, are you able to conjure up those feelings right now?
Yeah, I am.
All right. So just tell me the situation. Give me an example of something that she did that brought up a feeling of rage in you.
Well, I'll just use this morning as an example because it kind of just, it's a conflict that I feel like I deal with every weekend and I'm not sure how to deal with emotionally. But, you know, get up on Saturday mornings and because my wife typically tries to handle, you know, the baby overnight and then the early mornings because I do have to get up and go to work. On Saturdays, I'll get up and try to make sure that she's getting a chance to sleep in as late as she needs to, and I'll get up and take care of both kids. And you know, this morning my daughter was asleep, so I got my son, you know, up and dressed and was trying to get him breakfast. And as I'm working on cooking his breakfast is when she starts in on her very angry cry. And it usually goes from 0 to 60 for her. There's not a whole lot of warning. And, you know, so in that moment, and this morning I was able to kind of stave it off for a little bit, but it's one of those things where, again, I feel like I'm actively suppressing the emotion.
But, don't suppress it. Don't suppress it. What are you feeling right now as you're describing?
It's anger.
Where do you feel it?
My entire torso, I feel it. My stomach, my chest.
What does it feel like?
It feels tight. It feels pressure.
Tightness and pressure sound more like anxiety. Tell me about the angry feeling. Tell me about the powerful feeling inside of you. What does that feel like?
I'm really not sure that I know how to describe how that feels. I mean,
it feels like anxiety. You know, one of the things that happens is when we have a rise in anger or sometimes a rise in sadness or any emotions, that it comes cocooned in anxiety. Essentially, anxiety rises as the feeling rises. And what you're describing right now of like a feeling of tightness or wanting to run, that sounds like anxiety to me. Anger oftentimes is a more powerful feeling. Sometimes, you know, there's a feeling of heat involved. It's a feeling of, you know, wanting to just curl your fists up and do something with this power. Is that something that you feel?
Oh, sure. I mean,
Tell me about that feeling.
There's a part of me that wants to throw things. You know,
good.
The ball,
I want you to plug in with the feeling that you're feeling in your stomach or your chest right now that feels like this angry, hot, powerful, incredible Hulk-like feeling. And just breathe into that. Can you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
What does it feel like in your body? Do you feel it in your head, in your chest, in your stomach?
I'm not sure how to give it an adjective, but I mean, heat describes it. The desire to, I mean, gosh, just want to smash things or put holes in the wall or.
Good. All
right.
Now, who is the anger directed toward?
Just like you said.
you're not angry at the wall. Who's the anger directed toward?
Well, my daughter. My daughter, myself, my son, my wife.
Well, let's you know, stay focused on the primary source of the anger. You were talking about your daughter. You were talking about her crying when you had all these other things to do, and there's a feeling of heat inside of you that you just wanted to throw something or punch, but it wasn't the wall that was angering you. It was your daughter. Can you allow yourself to express some of these feelings of rage? What would you want to do if you weren't censoring yourself, if there were no ramifications and you can just act on this rage? What does that rage want to do?
It's hard to want to admit it, you know. Do whatever I can to shut her up at all costs, you know.
What is that? I don't want you to censor yourself. We all, you know, again, there are different parts of us. The way that we can be most integrated and most healthy isn't to just let the good part of us out, but to give equal attention to both parts of us. I'm not talking about acting on it, you know. I mean, there's 0.1% of the population's acts on these rageful feelings, but 100% of us have them. And if you could allow yourself to tap into the part of you that wants to destroy even something beautiful like your daughter, something that you love very much. It can allow you to, it's beautiful to allow yourself to plug into such powerful feelings. Can you allow yourself to just feel the rage that you feel toward your daughter and the part of you that wants to destroy her?
That's a hard thing to allow. And that's where I feel like I come to a precipice and feel like I need to turn around and walk away.
Yeah, there's a part of you that says your rage is not okay. There's a part of you that says these feelings are not okay. Who taught you this? Who taught you that it's not okay to feel these powerful feelings of rage? Listen, I know you're sitting there on the phone. You're thinking, "Oh my God, I'm talking to someone I haven't talked to before. There's, you know, one or two dozen people listening. I can't sit here and talk about wanting to wrap my fingers around my little baby girl's neck and just choke the life out of her. But you have back pain. You have crippling back pain. Your body doesn't give a shit. Your body doesn't care that it's socially unacceptable, or there's a dozen people listening, or that what are people going to think. All it thinks is, I have rage. I want to unload this rage, and I don't care what the consequences are. And of course you're not going to act on it, but to allow yourself to feel that rage, to allow yourself to have that pulsate throughout you and feel it, could give you this sense of internal harmony and equilibrium so that you don't need these defense mechanisms. Who taught you that rage isn't okay? Where did you learn this from?
I'm not entirely sure. I would imagine it was from my parents.
How did they teach you this?
Again, I'm not really sure. I mean, I've gone in my process of trying to dig down deep and try to get to the root cause of the rage. You know, I've encountered lots of feelings of not ever being good enough. I guess, you know, I know what it is now that I'm sitting here thinking about it. And when I was younger, my mom was very authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
I would not say abusive, at least not intentionally abusive. But if, as a child, if I was acting out on the emotions that, you know, are too big for a child to have or to know how to control or whatever, of course, she would have her own rage, and she would tell me that if I didn't stop, she was going to slap me, or she was going to hit me or spank me or whatever. You know, I needed to shut up, or she was going to hurt me, and if I didn't shut up, then she did. And I feel like this is a cycle that I'm continuing with my daughter, except that I'm not allowing myself to do that.
Well, Dustin, it's a cycle that you're continuing this cycle with yourself. As soon as you start to get in touch with really powerful emotions, you have the mother in your head telling you your feelings aren't okay. Do what you're supposed to. That's what I just saw. You were feeling this feeling of heat. You were getting in touch with your emotions. And as soon as you got too close, you had your mother in your head saying, Dustin, this isn't okay. Send your feelings away. And that's just what she did when you were growing up. Is the child in you, do you have any feelings toward your mom? I imagine there was a big part of you that just wanted your feelings to be validated. You were a kid. You were going through these trying, traumatic times. You were scared a lot of the time. You were going through these different transitions, you know. There's a lot of reasons to be angry as a kid, and if you found yourself acting out, it sounds like your mom was telling you, send those feelings away.
Yep.
Are there any feelings, any angry feelings that you have toward your mom when you think of the way that she invalidated your feelings, didn't treat you in this way that you wanted to be treated?
Absolutely.
Tell me about them. Tell me about the angry feelings that you feel that come up in you when you think about your mom stunting you, telling you, shut up or I'll shut you up.
You know, I've kind of been ignoring my mother lately because of some of this. And which is no good because she's coming to visit me in a couple weeks to see my daughter. She lives.
Yeah, we're not talking about the current present day mother. We're talking about the mother from decades ago. And again, ignoring is a passive form of anger. Right now, in the moment, at this time, Forrest, I know it's 1:30, but if we can go a little longer, I think that'd be great. Dustin, right now, if in the moment, if you could allow yourself to tap into these feelings that that 8-year-old, that 12-year-old version of you was feeling toward your mom, and allow yourself to feel these feelings instead of send them away, I think it's going to do you a world of good. Are you open to that?
I'm open to it. I just don't know how.
Well, you're taking a stance of powerlessness right now. You are in the military. You understand what power is, what empowering yourself is. When your mom was slapping you or telling you, you know, stop throwing a temper or else, you were taking a stance of powerlessness then. Do you want to go along and continue to be in back pain and elicit these defense mechanisms, or plug in with your feelings, plug in with your power?
I want to plug in. I want to get rid of it.
Well, just take a couple deep breaths and see if you can allow yourself. Open yourself up. You know, we've talked in this call about being nice to yourself. One of the primary ways that you can be nice to yourself is by letting yourself feel your feelings instead of sending them away, instead of detaching, instead of telling yourself they're not right or they're not okay. When you were a kid, and your mom was telling you, you know, you had these very powerful feelings and your mom was stunting you, I imagine that there was a part of you that didn't want to shut up, that wanted to shut her up. Can you tap into that?
Yeah, I can feel that.
All right. I want you to think of a time or an instance when your mom was trying to get you to shut up and there was something stirring in you. There was some feeling in you where you didn't want to shut up. You were just a kid, but you wanted to shut her up. You didn't like being stunted or muted or having your feelings dismissed like that. Can you plug into that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I want you to take a couple deep breaths and just allow yourself to feel the feeling that comes up in you when you think about this. And plug into your own power. Don't send it away. Don't detach from it. That's what a powerless man does, but you're not a powerless man. If you could go back, if you could empower yourself to stand up for yourself, to embrace your rage, what do you do with that rage? How do you tap into it? How do you unleash it?
God, I don't know. I imagine I'd start by telling her to shut up.
Okay. Would that work?
Surely not.
Okay. Well, then how do you get her attention? How do you step it up? What do you do to let her know how angry you are? Don't censor yourself.
Yeah, to be honest, I like to just reel back and throw my fist at her.
That's right. I want you to imagine just embracing these feelings of primitive rage that you have and just breathe into it and don't censor it. Any other feelings that come up, rationalization or guilt, put a pin in there. We're going to deal with that in a sec. But allow yourself to feel the feelings of rage that come up as you have this feeling of just sitting there, her looking at you, telling you these things, and what it would feel like just to rear back and slug her one with your fist. How does it feel inside of you?
Satisfaction.
Good. And allow yourself to keep going until you drain yourself of this rage. Is that it? Is it just one punch, or is there more there?
No, God, I feel like I'd knock her down and start kicking her while she was down.
Good. Let yourself imagine it. Don't send it away. Embrace this feeling of rage. It's something you've been sending away for a long time. What do you do? What do you want to do with her once you have her on the ground?
I just want to keep kicking. I want to keep kicking. I want to kick her in her stomach, in her face, in her arms.
That's right. You're not dusting the man. You're dusting the beast right now. And just allow yourself to just keep going, keep kicking, keep punching, keep grabbing until the rage is drained out of you. What do you see yourself doing toward her?
probably the same thing that I feel like I want to do to my own dogs at times and just collapse her skull.
Uh-huh. Good. And how does it feel to do that?
Calming.
Does it drain you of your feeling of this rage that you have if you were to just collapse her skull?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like that's what it would take to finally feel drained. Get to the point where I just see destruction.
Does it feel draining in your body to allow yourself to imagine doing that to her? Let yourself feel it. And imagine it. Imagine it. These aren't just words. What's going on?
I just feel like I would have to stand there and stare at her for a little bit after doing that, just to take in the destruction that I've caused.
As you look down on her and you see her in her limp state, what feeling is there as you look down and see your mom and see the destruction that you caused? How do you feel?
Satisfied.
There's a satisfied feeling?
Yep.
Are there any other feelings when you look down on her? Are there any other emotions that come up as you see her lying there, her skull crushed in?
I don't know. Guilt.
Is there feelings of guilt? I want you to tell me what you think I want to hear.
There's twinges of guilt.
Tell me about the positive feelings that you feel. It sounds like there are feelings of guilt. What do you want to let her know in her last moments of life in this fantasy? Why you did what you did? What did you want to let her know?
I'm just trying to think of the words. Just bear with me a minute.
Take your time.
That's what you get for being selfish.
Yeah.
That's what you get for trying to shut me up.
Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to come to this. I didn't want to have to do this. And when you look down at her and you see her, she's your mom. And it sounds like there's some positive feelings too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, after seeing it, you know, I'd feel terrible about what I did.
Yeah.
I'd feel satisfied, but I mean, yeah, I'd want to get down and hug her and tell her I'm sorry.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine getting down and letting her know that you do love her, and there are loving feelings too. Really let yourself feel that. It's not just about the rage. It's about the rage and feelings of guilt over that rage, or feelings of love on top of that. And allow yourself to just imagine kneeling down and seeing her and in her broken state and just letting yourself feel these loving feelings. She's your mom. And you care about her and you love her.
Yeah, I just wish that I could go back and help her fight whatever it was that made her want to treat me that way.
Yeah, there's a real feeling of empathy for what she must have been going through too. But, you know, 6-year-old Dustin didn't care about any of that. All he knew was his needs weren't getting met. And I think what's going on is you have a lot of mixed feelings inside of you and can let her know, you know, I didn't want to have to do this. I didn't want it to come down to this. This is the only thing that I can do to assert my feelings and break free. But I love you, and I'm sorry that I had to do this. I'm sorry that I had to kill you in this way. But I had a lot of rage inside of me. And I needed you to know that it was there.
Right.
And what do you want to do now with this body that's in front of you to get closure on this situation, on this scenario?
Just want to give her a hug and tell her I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, let yourself do that. Imagine getting down and giving her a hug and letting her know that you're sorry. Your mom is there and she's in your head all the time throughout the day telling you your feelings aren't okay. Your anger isn't okay. Your rage isn't okay. And let her know this is what you're capable of. When you hear that, you are going to kill that voice. You're going to kill her. Because it isn't okay for her to tell you that your feelings are bad or not okay. You have a lot of love for her. You have a lot of love for her. But if she rises up again, you'll kill her again. Dustin, do you hear your mom in your head sometimes telling you you're not okay? Telling you your feelings aren't all right?
I don't know that I'd say it's, I hear it in her voice, but yeah, I mean, I feel like that they're not okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to tell myself, since, you know, going across TMS and all the materials I've covered, you know, I try to tell myself and convince myself, at least consciously, that it's okay to feel those emotions.
Yeah.
But but deep down, I guess I still don't accept that.
Well, you know, I think that you have a lot of insight, you have a lot of awareness, and it sounds like you have a lot of discipline, too, on working on all of this. And I think for you, the challenge is going to be when you hear, you know, these voices in your head, this destructive side. When I say these voices in your head, I don't mean it's in a schizophrenic way, but we all have voices in our head, you know, when this destructive side tells you your feelings don't matter, your rage doesn't matter, you're not good enough, there's something wrong with you, you need to do this or else. To allow yourself to step up, embrace your internal empowerment, and slay this beast, just like you did just now. You let yourself feel it in your body, you let yourself imagine it, and you drained yourself of the rage. And then you really got in touch with the feelings that you felt afterward.
Right.
How do you feel after allowing yourself, giving yourself the gift of feeling these feelings that you've had inside of you?
Honestly, a little drained.
Well, that's great. I think it's been, you know, lots of times these things that are pent up and you could cause a lot of anxiety, and feeling drained afterward is what you want. It's tiring, but it's calm at least.
Yeah, it is calm.
Good, good. So, Dustin, that was a great example of what it means to really embrace your feelings of rage. Allowing yourself to feel the physical feelings of rage in your body. And not only that, but even allowing yourself to do something with it, to discharge it. Sometimes I'll have a client in my office and I'll just toss them a magazine and they'll just like rip it to shreds, you know, and letting themselves imagine that this is their mom or their dad or their daughter or whoever, that they're just unleashing this rage on and draining themselves of it. You know, living in this civilization, we don't really have the opportunities to drain this rage that we have. So the mind doesn't really know the difference between fantasy and reality. Giving yourself the ability to tap into that rage, unload it, unleash all the rage that you have and drain yourself of it, is really giving yourself the gift of feeling your feelings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess for me, the challenge is feeling that that's a healthy thing to do. I mean, I feel better. I certainly feel better now after going through that exercise. I guess it's just there's a part of me that has a hard time accepting that going through that kind of fantasy is mentally healthy, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what you're saying, and I, you know, again, intellectually, I get it. It's just a part of.
Well, I do get it, and that's the barrier that a lot of people face, is a feeling of this rage is inside of me, but it is not okay to indulge in that. You know, if you were a sociopath, Dustin, we would not have been going through that exercise, right? You know, because clearly, you know, acting on these things is not okay, but allowing yourself to feel them. I've worked with people who were in anger management before, and doing something like that, allowing yourself to feel the rage, actually reduces people's expressions of outward anger because they don't need it. You know, and so just like crying is really healthy when you're sad, and, you know, throwing up feels a lot better when you're sick or have food poisoning. Likewise, allowing yourself to drain yourself of this feeling of rage is really healthy when you're repressing all of these rageful energy. And, you know, that's something you can discover for yourself. How do you feel afterward? There's a lot of counter messages we get from your parents or society. It's not okay to be angry, but again, we're human beings. We have a lot of primitive feelings that don't get a lot of acknowledgement. So thank you very much, Dustin, for being open to exploring some of these feelings. I know that it isn't easy, especially when it's in a public forum like that, but I think that can be really helpful for a lot of other people, what you are open to doing or exploring.
I certainly hope so.
And thank your daughter for me, too.
I sure will. I appreciate you giving me the time.
Sure. Forrest?
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, I just want to really thank you for that. I'm multitasking as usual, but I'm also seeing... So the technique that you were using was ISTDP, right, Alan?
Right, that's right.
And so I'm seeing an ISTDP therapist right now myself. And, I mean, having seen you go through that process, I think it gives me strength to do similar things with my own. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, and, you know, remember, I mean, oftentimes when we're people pleasers, when we put other people's needs ahead of our own, that can generate a lot of rage because we're essentially rejecting ourselves continuously. You're not okay. Your needs don't matter. That's going to generate a lot of rage. Allowing yourself to tap into that rage, knowing that this anger is okay, it could really relieve some of that repression. So yeah, that was great. I'm really glad that Dustin was open to exploring those emotions. Sometimes it can be hard to open yourself up to that.
Yeah. Does anyone in the chat room have any final questions that they want to ask? We can. Dustin just quipped, time to be Bruce Banner again, no more Incredible Hulk.
I've utilized these like ISTDP techniques with many, many different clients, and no one has ever, you know, gone out and acted on this rage. I think that a fear that a lot of people have is, if I get in touch with this rage, I'm going to do something destructive. But It's, you know, again, like I said, unless you're a sociopath, you're not going to act on these feelings. That's one of the advantages that we have over these animals who also have this rage, is we have the capacity to keep it under wraps or not act on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, there's another question which I'm not going to take because it's I don't want to open up a new can of worms. I just want to say, are there any follow-up questions about what's already been discussed? What I was going to say is that, and Howard Schubner, oh, sorry, no, about the difference between rage and acting out on rage, Dr. Sarno, I think, mentions that explicitly in a couple of his books, saying, you know, just because you have the rage doesn't mean that you're actually going to do anything. That having the rage, he's very clear that having the rage is just part of the normal human experience. That everybody has TMS to a different to a greater or lesser degree, and TMS is the biggest thing that causes it is rage. Do you want to? Well, I'll bump this question to you. So the question BWS in the chat room says, "Can you ask why my pain has turned into anxiety?" And I, shall we bump that to the next session? We've got another one planned 6 weeks from now, right?
Sure. Yeah, we can play with that. We can talk about it now. I have a few more minutes if
okay.
You wanted to patch them through.
Okay, Brandon, I think you're, can you hear me now? Say something, please.
Hi.
You were just asking that question about anxiety. I'm afraid that I may have distracted you a little bit, but so Alan was talking about the symptom imperative. Do you want to ask him a follow-up question?
Yeah, I about 2 years ago, I got into a car accident, and I had anxiety all my life ever since college, and about 2 years ago, I was on the way to see my brand new child, who was 1 day old, and I got into an accident and had back pain for 2 years.
Oh my God!
Now that I've read Dr. Sarno's book, it's turned back into anxiety. But my pain is gone. But now I have like tremendous anxiety.
And you had anxiety before?
Yeah, during finals week, my senior year in college.
So, I mean, did you have anxiety perpetually until the car accident?
No, it was okay. On and off. So, you know, like every few years or so, I would have bad anxiety for a couple months, and then it would go away.
So, yeah, you know, did you have anxiety during the 2 years that you had pain, or did you have no need
no.
for it?
No.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in that situation, they're just the same. You had anxiety, and then you got in a car accident. And all of a sudden, you know, your back was hurting, and it was this preoccupation, and your body didn't need the anxiety anymore because the back pain was serving the same purpose. And then, and oftentimes people get in car accidents, and maybe there can even be an acute injury, but when the injury stays, when it sticks, oftentimes it's TMS just piggybacking on the original injury. So then, you know, either the anxiety came back, or the back pain went away, but you needed another preoccupation, so now you have the anxiety again. And much like Dustin or Alex, I imagine that the same things are going on that give you a need for these symptoms.
Yeah, I also, you know, my back pain has gone away, but, you know, it's moved around to my neck sometimes too, mm-hmm. and it's not pain. It's just kind of like uncomfortable. Feels tight, you know. So it's in my neck a little too. And now I'm, you know, I've read all Dr. Sarno's books, and the reason I found you guys is because I'm researching for more. You know, I want to know, you know, everything I can about this, and that's why I'm in this chat room today.
Well, how is the anxiety affecting your life?
Well, I think it's. I'm a teacher, so I have the summer off. So sitting around all day probably doesn't do it much good either. Because when I find that I'm busy, my anxiety is non-existent.
Wow.
You know
so
what
it
I mean?
Seems like when you're preoccupied with this is it's amazing, isn't it? That I've talked to people where they had excruciating back pain, but they were at a basketball game or a concert or something where they were really into and they didn't feel the pain the whole time because they were otherwise occupied. So It sounds like, is it Brandon?
Yeah.
It sounds like, Brandon, that that for you, the anxiety is this real preoccupation. When you're around other people or you're engaged in some activity, you're in it. But as soon as you get alone and you're by yourself,
yeah,
like your mind starts
yeah,
abusing you.
Right.
Well, what happens? I mean, instead of, you look at like the Buddhist monk where they go and meditate for 4 hours and being with themselves is kind of like a joy, you know. What happens to you when you're by yourself? What does your mind start doing to you?
Well, I start, you know, and I've kind of been obsessive about this, and I was watching, I think the host of this, I've been watching some of his stuff on YouTube, and someone asked him somewhere, like, can you obsess too much about this? You know, and I've been really obsessing about it, and my back pain ran away, and then I had shoulder surgery. It has nothing to do with TMS. I got into a bicycle accident. A car actually hit me, and I tore some stuff in my shoulder. So I was planning on having a real active summer. You know, I ride my bike. I'm a football coach. I'm a teacher. I'm trying to keep myself busy. But I had this surgery, and you can't really do anything for 4 weeks. So I've just kind of been chilling out, which has been my own worst. And it's been like the demons, you know. My back pain went away, and then my neck started hurting a little, so now I started thinking there's something wrong with my neck.
You know what I'm noticing is it seems like you always need to be preoccupied with something. You are preoccupied with back pain and then anxiety and then neck pain, and now you're even obsessed with trying to find, you know, a solution to all of this. What happens when you just have stillness?
I mean,
you don't know because it's something that you've never.
And you know, another thing, like, you know, I was taking all kinds of medicines. You know, I used to get headaches, and I thought it was allergies. So, you know, I was taking a steroidal nose spray. I was taking anti-inflammatories for pain and all this stuff. And, you know, I've gone off of all those now and exactly the same person. You know, I realized that it wasn't any of that.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Yeah, that's the one saving grace, is that even though I'm not taking any of those medicines anymore, I still am without pain.
Yeah.
You know, it's just anxiety. I'm just trying to deal with the anxiety.
All of these symptoms that you have the same purpose of keeping you roped in, keeping you hooked. And you wake up and you're thinking about it and you're like, when's it going to come and what can I do about it? And it's almost like a full-time job, worrying about, thinking about, monitoring and checking in on all of these symptoms.
Right.
And
you know, like I played basketball before my surgery. I've been playing the Wii a little bit. That was something.
Hey, Brandon, could we get you to call back in over the phone also?
Can you not hear me?
Yeah, you're cutting in and out. I think it's a Skype thing.
Is that better?
It's a lot better, yeah. So, you're a football coach.
Yep.
You played football, you played basketball.
Yeah, oh, and I just ran the other day. And, you know, you were saying that, you know, I'm constantly worrying about it. Well, you know, for the next 2 days after running on the treadmill, you know, first thing in the morning when I woke up, I was like, oh, man, is it going to hurt?
You terrify yourself. You scare the hell out of yourself.
Yeah.
Is this something that is you've been doing for a long time?
No, not really. I mean,
I'm wondering what it is that makes it so painful to just be around yourself and not have an activity to keep your mind on something.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the back pain started when I had, you know, like I said, I had a new baby. And, you know, with Dr. Sarno, with all his books, you know, he said that, you know, that's one of the top ones of new stresses in your life that can kind of drive you nuts.
Well, that's true, but you had a lot of anxiety even before that.
Before that, yeah.
I'm assuming that there was some way of relating with yourself that your mind is rebelling against.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs, I don't do any of that stuff. I just, when I'm not busy or not able to exercise, I kind of go bananas. So maybe
Do you put a lot of pressure on yourself?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and everything I do, like, you know, the perfectionism and the, you know, if someone doesn't do something that I ask them to do, I do it, you know, it's just kind of put it all on me.
You know, we're talking about ways that you can be relating to yourself that bring this up, and you talk about being perfectionistic, putting a ton of pressure on yourself like it's a normal way to be treated. How old is your kid now, two?
I have three.
You have three kids.
Right. Yeah, 14, 4, and 2.
All right. And do,
so, yeah,
do you,
2 years back pain.
Do you put a ton of pressure on them? Like you need to get all A's or else?
No, but it's definitely a lot of... you got to do it my way, or I'm going to be upset.
I see.
You know what I mean? Even with the little ones.
Yeah. So, you know, it seems like the way that you you treat yourself is like you're a drill sergeant.
Right.
It even spills over to your kids.
And the crazy thing is, when I'm teaching, as a teacher, I'm very, very patient and lenient and... You know, I'm not that way with my students, yeah.
So you have the capacity to act patiently and lovingly and with more care and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't use that when you're dealing with your own self.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, I guess what I'm searching for is, you know, a way, someone to give an example of a way that, you know, they got rid of all this so that it can be the same, you know, it can be my way to get rid of all this. You know what I mean?
You're looking for intellectual techniques. You're looking for ways to eliminate the pain and get back to the way things were. Your body doesn't want to get back to the way things were. Your body does not like being treated like a drill sergeant. I mean, no wonder you know it's so difficult being by yourself without having an activity. When you're having an activity, you can at least be in the moment, and the drill sergeant in your head backs off a little bit.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're by yourself, boom, you know, you're in the Army, you're in the Marines, you're exposed to this drill sergeant in your head that's telling you more, better, better. And it's not about getting rid of these symptoms. It's about listening to the symptoms and learning to relate to yourself in a different way. I mean, you're talking about treating yourself like a drill sergeant, like it's okay. You know, it sounded like you took so much pride when you said, when I talk to my students, I'm compassionate and I'm patient and, you know, I'm caring with them. And it seems like, you know, you're capable of that. Do you not feel like you deserve to be treated that way?
I don't know. And like, you know, this has really caused me to go back and think about lots of things in my life. And, you know, a lot of this, I heard a lot of stories stemming from, like, childhood stuff. You know, my parents were very compassionate, great, wonderful parents. I can't see anything in my childhood that would make me be this way. So I'm just like, you know, I don't know. I don't know where this came from, you know, but I definitely, and even in school or college, you know, I didn't have to get straight A's. I didn't have to be the best at everything. I just had to be good.
Well,
you know,
so
I wasn't even a perfectionist.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we had more time, we could look into what happened when you were young to, I don't know, or somewhere along the lifespan to trigger treating yourself like this. But just for right now, I think that the most important thing is, like, do you care that you treat yourself like this? You know, I think what you're saying is, I want all these symptoms to go away so I could just go on, live my life, and be awful to myself. You know, I mean, I think that the first thing is to just, like, you know, look in the mirror, metaphorically or, you know, actually, and ask yourself, do I deserve to be treated with such relentlessness? Do I deserve to be treated in this way where I'm not this, like, nurturing, loving caretaker to myself, but I'm, you know, this pressure monger where I scare myself, where I tell myself, you have to do this or else? It's a hard way to live, Brandon.
Yeah, and one thing that's been bothering me, you know, with getting the surgery and stuff during the summer is I feel guilty that, you know, I haven't done that as much during the summer with my family. You know, I didn't go on vacation.
God, look at this. It's like even post-surgery, you're sitting there beating yourself up, tearing yourself down, telling yourself you're not doing enough. It's mean.
That's the biggest part of my thought process when I'm by myself this summer.
I mean, does that strike you as a cruel way of treating yourself?
Well,
I'm
now that we're
thinking, yeah, this poor guy got shoulder surgery. He's in pain. He's shrouded in anxiety, and he's recovering. And you're sitting there and taking that same information and saying, yeah, you lazy asshole, get with it.
Right.
I mean, man, no wonder you have this much anxiety. I mean, anyone would, living being subjected to that kind of treatment.
There are times where I'm sitting there and I'm saying, why am I constantly thinking these things? Why can't I just have a summer where I chill out? You know, why do I have to be worried about everybody else?
Do you ask yourself that, like, compassionately or, like, step to it?
Right. It's probably
another,
like, hey, idiot. Right.
Yeah, just another thing that
right.
you're doing wrong. It's mean.
Right. Right.
You know, I again, these symptoms, they're not your enemy. They're not something to be stamped out or eliminated. I know it can feel like that sometimes because they're so painful to live with, but a lot of times they're trying to steer you. It's like a seeing eye dog, you know. It's like there's a therapist in L.A. Who talks about it, a phrase that I love. It's like a lighthouse in the night. It's shining a light on something that you can't see. And I'm sitting here talking to you, and man, I mean, you're a football coach. I played football in high school. Like, it's, you know, like, practices suck. The coaches
right.
are just pushing you and run and faster, and I don't care if you're tired. And it's no way to treat yourself.
Right. That's,
you know,
it's
in
almost
real
like
life.
I'm coaching myself. Right.
Yeah, yeah. You don't need a coach, Brandon. You need someone to take care of you.
Yeah.
You need someone to treat you like a human being. I mean, you said that your mom was really, like, or your parents were really compassionate and loving. Do you remember when you were young and you would, like, fell down and scraped your knee, or you were really upset about something, what it was like for your mom to just, like, take care of you and nurture you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did that feel?
Great.
Why would you rob yourself of that from, you know, if you didn't know how to be compassionate? If you didn't know how to be nurturing, you know, the first step would be to teach you. But you already know how. It sounds like you're like this very cool, laid-back, nurturing teacher. You're just withholding it from yourself.
Yeah, I'm giving it to everybody but myself.
You're giving it to everyone but yourself. I mean, you know, I think the first step is to actually care that you're being treated like that. Not like, oh, I need to change that because that's not right. But to actually plug in with the emotion of being treated so cruelly. You know, a lot of times, you know, in therapy and TMS, we talk a lot about going back to your childhood and finding out the reason for all of this. But sometimes a big part of it is just opening your eyes to the fact that, wow, I treat myself in this really mean way and I don't have to. And a lot of times it's just a decision and just a recognition of how you're being treated and how great it feels to be treated nicely. And I'm talking to you right now, and it's like 10 minutes ago you were like, yeah, I treat myself like a piece of shit. And now it sounds like you're recognizing it more and saying, like, wait a minute, that's not cool.
Right.
I'm telling you, you know, with your symptoms, I think that – what you need more than anything is to really look at yourself with like open, nurturing, caring eyes. I don't know where along the line you felt like you don't deserve that kind of treatment, but to look at yourself, and I've had clients do this before. It sounds kind of cheesy, but like if you look in the mirror and look in your eyes, like our eyes don't change. You have the same eyes that you had when you were 3, 4, 5 years old. And just look at yourself and see your own humanity and just ask yourself, do you deserve to be treated like, you know, your life is a football practice?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you deserve to be treated like you're a human being and you have needs and you have suffering and, you know, be treated nicely?
Mm-hmm.
I think your symptoms are trying to let you know, treat us nicely, Brandon. Don't be so mean to us.
Right.
What's going on right now with your anxiety or pain? Is there any there?
Nope.
Yeah. I think that when you open yourself up to feel compassion for yourself, to feel feelings for yourself, you don't need any of these symptoms. You're whole.
Yeah. It definitely drives me nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, and you remember, you're like, wow, this makes a lot of sense, of course. And I promise you, a week from now, you will have forgotten. But just remember again. You know, we need to learn things over and over. You teach. You know, it's like we need to learn the state capitals like at the beginning of third grade and fifth grade and seventh grade because we keep forgetting. It's the same thing. You'll forget and just remind yourself, wait a minute. I'm treating myself cruelly. I could be nice to myself. Then you'll forget. And, you know, the more you learn that and tell yourself that and practice it, that could become your default setting. And, you know, not only could you live symptom-free, but you can live without this tyrant in your head constantly tearing you apart.
Right.
Cool. You feel like you have direction?
Yes, thank you so much, and I know you went longer than you were supposed to, but thank you
That's
so
okay.
much.
That's okay. No, it's my pleasure.
All right, talk to you guys later.
Okay, all right.
Indeed. Thank you so much for continuing. I was just thinking this myself. Thanks for going. I was joking in the admin channel that pretty soon I was going to have that you were too much of a TMS goodist, and you were too much of a goodist, I should say, and I was going to have to cut you off soon. But
no, trust me,
really
I'm
glad
plenty
to have
selfish. I just like doing this a lot.
Glad to hear. It's good to have a man who likes his job.
All right, so maybe this would be a good place to stop for today, but we'll talk, Forrest, about you know, maybe sometime in the fall. I start teaching again in a month, so I want to make sure that we find a time that can work. I'm not sure if it's going to be 6 weeks from today or 8 weeks from today, but we'll talk about it over the next few weeks.
Sounds great. Okay. Well, we'll be in touch.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, for being so open and talking about some of these things. It's not easy to open up with a lot of people listening, but I couldn't do it without everyone's participation.
Yeah. And we will work to get the chat log and the audio up as soon as we can. Talk to you later.
Great. And thank you, Forrest, for putting this on, and to all of the staff members and the people who volunteered to moderate. I think that, you know, it really makes it run very smoothly, and it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, it is absolutely our pleasure. If remember the big reason why I started the peer network, or one of the biggest reasons why I started the peer network, one is just the incredible sense of gratitude that I had to the peer community, because that's how I healed. But also it was because I wanted there to be a TMS wiki where I could read success stories, because I had been dealing with it for 18 years, and I wanted the resource for myself. And it's the same way, you know, I get a tremendous amount out of participating every week. I have to say it because I'm me. Every week we've got this drop-in chat and people can come and join the conversation. I get a tremendous amount out of that, and I get a tremendous amount out of this, so thank you. I'm looking forward to listening to it again.
Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. I guess I should say at the end, just to reemphasize what Alan and I were saying before, You know, there's no professional relationship here. He's just trying to show you some skills that he believes work for a lot of people and work for a lot of his patients. It's always very, very important to meet with your doctor. Dr. Sarno, all of the doctors, they emphasize that. You really don't want to miss something big. Well, I hope to see you all around on the forum.